stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the automatic doors. They will be closing in a moment. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Monorail Tales podcast. Steve and I are your co-hosts for this show. So welcome to the show, Steve.
Hello.
As fans of Disney, I think we all have a hunger to learn as much as we can about it. That's why many of us listen to podcasts, read books, or watch YouTube videos, etc. Our guest tonight had worked for Disney for many years, and during that time had various roles as a cast member. Plus, he also lived in the town of Celebration, which had been built by Disney many years ago. To be honest, after talking with him more than once by phone over the past few weeks, I soon realized that he has so many interesting and funny stories that he could share with us. That I've already invited him back onto future episodes. So tonight, we're just going to work on a framework of his Disney career and get to know him a little bit. And then on future episodes, we will come back and fill that framework in. One last thing before I introduce him. Before we close out the show for tonight, I would like for us to share with you, the listener, about the not-for-profit Waffles Foundation. So we will get to that before we close out. So at this time, let's get on with the show and introduce our very, very special guest, Mr. Al Barner.
Thank you, Sheila. It's wonderful to be on the show. I thank you and Steve so much to be here. It's my pleasure. I've been a lifelong Disney fan my entire life. I've worked for the company over 8 years. I just adore it. And I'm happy to be here and with fellow Disney lovers and share my stories.
Well, you and I have talked a couple of weeks now, I think. You joined our group, and that's how I got to know you. And we just took it from there. And I know when I'm talking to you, so many stories come out of you that I just know our listeners are going to enjoy them. So, like all of our guests, we do have to start at the beginning before we get to, you know, the meat of the interview. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and was born in 1965. And it's funny, the year 1971 seemed very pivotal to me because that was the year that I'm born December 24th. So that particular year, my mom and I were very close, and she wanted to get one more Christmas out of it, I think, that I believed in Santa. And, you know, at that point, I had my doubts, little things here and there. So we went into a department store. And, you know, of course, it being Brooklyn, it was very diverse. And we walked into the department store. And when we walked in, the man said, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "Oh, we're here to see Santa." And he said, "Well, which one do you want to see?" Because they had, you know, different variations of Santa being Brooklyn. And my mom was like, "Well, what do you mean? He's only 5 years old." I said, "Mom, it's okay. I kind of had my doubts anyway." She said, "Oh, but I wanted to get one more year out of it." So it seemed like that was 1971, December of 71. So maybe I needed something else to believe in, something more tangible. And I remember right after that, my earliest recollection of Disney was going to see the Angela Lansbury movie, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which came out.
Yeah.
Wonderful movie, 1971. I think it was like December 13th that it premiered. And I just... maybe it was just that I wasn't believing in Santa anymore. And I had heard about Disney because my parents, my brother and my sister had gone to Disneyland 2 years before, 3 years before. But I was too young to remember it. I had some toys, some memories from it, as far as like a toy would go, but no recollection whatsoever. So I think Disney became my thing, and it was tangible. It was real, because what did we watch every Sunday? Was Disney's Wonderful World of Color, which became The Wonderful World of Disney. So Disney was very entrenched in my mind, and I just took to it. I mean, there were so many things back in those days, but I just took to Disney at a very young age, and it never really, and to this day, it hasn't left me.
Yeah, I've got the same kind of timeline that you have with that. That's my earliest memories too. We're only 3 years apart. So
okay.
I won't say older or younger, but I am older.
Okay, that's okay. You know, you're only as old as you feel, right?
Yeah. Oh, in that case, I am really old.
Nah, Disney Pixie Dust keeps you young.
Oh, yeah.
So you said that, you know, your parents went to Disneyland. Did you go to Disneyland yourself?
Yes, I did go with them and my brother and sister, but I was too young to remember it. I believe they went in 1969, so I was 3 or 2 and a half. I really didn't remember it, but thankfully, my Aunt Joan, who actually still owns a travel agency, she was a travel agent for so many years, and she, every time we got together, she had been all over the world with her kids and my uncle, and she would always talk about Disney, and she kind of kept that spark going. And my father was a watchmaker. He was a watchmaker for over 75 years, and he just passed at 95 last year. So he wasn't keen on going on vacation other than maybe the first 2 weeks in July when jewelry business tends to do that. So 1 year, somehow between my aunt and my mom or all of us together, we talked him into going to Disney World, Walt Disney World, in 1977. For the first time, that's when I ever went there for the first time, and I completely fell in love with it at that point. And then I was just head over heels with it since then.
Now, did you stay on property on that visit?
No, we didn't, because if you remember, back in 1977, you only had 3 properties. You had the campgrounds, and we were from Brooklyn, so we didn't do any camping. And
not on purpose.
Exactly. Camping to us was sitting on the stoop or the porch out in front, you know. But no, it was all in the campgrounds. And then they had the Contemporary Resort and they had the Polynesian Resort. And, you know, we didn't have the money to stay at either one of those. So we ended up staying on Highway 192, which is why, you know, why so many hotels are on Highway 192 is because there were only those 3 places to stay. And they were pretty pricey. So we just stayed on 192 and we just enjoyed it. And we, you know, we went by Eastern Airlines, which is defunct.
Right.
Eastern Airlines used to be a ride, you know, Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger Spin, which is in Disney, you know, for a long time now. That was originally called the Wings of Man. And it was sponsored by Eastern Airlines. And they built Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin on that ride track. So that ride used to be like a promotion for Eastern Airlines. And we went by Eastern Airlines and we didn't stay on property, but man, I just was head over heels with it right away.
Yeah, I've got that song, If You Had Wings, going through my head right now.
Yeah, that's the one. That is the one. You know, but we did go visit the Polynesian because my father had heard that the Beatles broke up at the Polynesian Resort.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I'm sure you guys know about that. And how John Lennon was the last one to sign the papers. And so we did go visit the Polynesian. And we also found out that it was Uncle Walt's. You know, those of us who love Disney, you know, I worked in the Disney store as well as one of the things which will come out. But all of us at the Disney store, we'd always give people the honorary title of Uncle. And we called Walt Uncle Walt. And so if someone came in who was really a Disney person, we would say Uncle or Aunt. But Uncle Walt, I became a big fan of Uncle Walt very early on.
Oh, wow. That's neat.
That very first visit, how long were you down there for?
We actually stayed for 1 week. It was actually, you know, we went on Easter vacation. The schools up north were always off for a week at that point. So I remember Easter was very late that year. It was in April, probably April 12th or something. And I remember I'm a huge Mets fan as well. But I remember that was the one negative thing about the trip was that spring training was over. And I said, wow, I was hoping to see the Mets, but we didn't see the Mets, but we so much saw Disney. And what was so amazing about Disney back in those days was that you only had the Magic Kingdom. You only had the two hotels and the campground. You had all these places on 192, which were all these, you know, wax museums and water parks and little things. But Disney was, of course, the highlight. And you know, we just had, the marketplace itself was so different. You know, you had you just had pretty much a third of what it is today. And just seeing the stores and going there, and I mean, the Magic Kingdom, I just fell in love with it, you know, the parades. And of course, going to the monorail, you had the Mark IV monorails back then, which what stands out in my mind with the Mark IVs, of course, I would go on to drive the Mark VIs later on, but the Mark IVs didn't have automatic doors. So I remember being like exhausted walking through the Magic Kingdom for like the whole entire day. And I remember we finally left and it was open till 11 o'clock or whatever it was. And we would sit, you'd sit on the monorail and the doors would have to be closed by the monorail cast members each individually. So I remember falling asleep and then hearing bang, bang, bang. And you'd kind of jar up and what's going on? Oh yeah, I'm at Disney. So, but it was a good memory.
And I got to ask, on that first trip, I'm assuming, I don't know how many people you had that went down there then, but did you guys drive? And if so, what'd you drive in?
No, well, we didn't drive. We were a driving family, but we did not drive because my Aunt Joan was a travel agent, so she stopped holding up for us. So we went via Eastern Airlines, and that was great too, because back in those days, they gave you the wings. Like if you were a kid going on, they brought you up to the cockpit. I went to the cockpit. I got the wings, you know, which I never realized I'd get monorail wings later on. But I had these wings that they gave me that I wore. I probably wore them out. And it was, they gave you food on the plane. And I remember this too. I saw the movie. They always showed you a movie. I saw the movie, Oh God, with George Burns and John Denver.
Oh my gosh.
So we did fly, yes.
Cool.
Yes. Yeah, you just brought back a memory for me, because when I emigrated to Canada in 79, I had my two oldest boys with me. And they from British Airways, they got like little wings and was allowed up in the cockpit. And in those days, you could even smoke on the plane, which is really disgusting when I think about it now.
Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It was a different time. And you know, It was easier, and it was funny. We did rent the car, and Steve was mentioning that we drive down. But to tell you how different of a world it was on the way back, I guess we didn't want to leave Disney. We were kind of late, you know, getting through the airport and all that. And my father turned around, and he had to rent the car. You know, my mom and they were both driving it. But he said, oh, he goes, we're going to be late for the flight. So we found this guy in the airport who was just a random guy who had just dropped somebody off or something. And he gave the guy $5 to bring the rental car back. And the guy brought it back.
Yeah. The days of trust.
Yeah, different world now, for sure.
Sure was.
So we are going to move on from this point, but it's a question I ask everyone when they first went to Disney. I don't know if you can remember that moment when you go underneath a train station and you see the castle. What did that mean anything to you at that young age? Or
it did, it sure did, because I had seen it so many times on Disney's World of Color and Wonderful World of Disney. It was like I felt like I was here. And it's funny because I mean I didn't really do a lot of reading up on Disney, but I kind of love the fact that you had to go on the monorail and you went into Walt's world. And when I walked up Main Street, it was like that curtain was pulled back and I just saw it for real for the first time. And even the fact of it being, it was April, but of course Disney, you know, in Florida, it's warm. And I'm coming from a cold climate from the north. It was still probably 40, 45 degrees up north at that point. And it was like 85 degrees in Florida. And I said, you know what? This is for me. I'm home. And I loved it. And I just took to it so readily. And I'll never forget that moment. And as many times as I go to Disney and have been to Disney and have brought people into Disney, that's one of my favorite things of going, is bringing somebody there for the first time or someone that hasn't been there for a long time and just looking at their expression on their face and living it through their eyes is just the most amazing thing.
Okay, so that was your first visit. And as I said, we're just doing a framework tonight because I'll probably end up going back to talking a bit more about that. But when was the next time you went to Disney after that very first trip?
The next time was a while later. It was like 1985 was the next time we went. And of course, at this point, we had Epcot. And Epcot was wonderful. I remember It was great because now you had two parks, and I really loved Epcot because I'm not really a thrill ride person, and it's maybe one thing I kind of miss a little bit about the Epcot rides is that you could almost go on. I think I remember going on every single ride. So now, like, sometimes with some of the rides, like, oh, man, I don't want to go on that. My wife doesn't drive. I don't want to be nauseous coming home. But back then, you had all these, you know, they were kind of slow-moving rides, World of Motion. And, of course, Spaceship Earth is the same. And you had the Energy Ride and all these different things and the Land Pavilion with the – and, you know, what I remember back then, I remember getting a soundtrack of the – they had a lot of great soundtracks then. One of them was Listen to the Land. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole song, if you remember.
Yep.
So it was great. I mean, it was nice having the two parks. Marketplace was a little bigger back then. So yes, the 85 was the next trip, and it was great. And we, at that point, we had my niece with us, who was like 6 years old. And of course, I got to see it through her eyes, and she was a big fan of Figment. And that was like, you know, Figment's the unofficial mascot of Epcot. And as you'll find out later on, I have Figment to thank for getting me on Dream Squad. I'll tell you that story when that's a good time. But we always had a good feeling for Figment, and that's when we got our introduction to Figment.
Okay, what hotels were there then, or did you still stay off property?
That then we stayed off property at that time as well, because we just I believe we stayed at a Holiday Inn on Highway 192. There were a few more hotels at Disney at that point, but I just think we hadn't really. I think we let my Aunt Joan set it up for us, and we just kind of went in with it, just with the idea that we were going to stay off property, and we didn't really give it a thought. I think the thought was we'd rather just eat meals at Disney and buy more souvenirs than pay maybe the extra money it was to Disney. They didn't have a lot of the perks yet at that point. They didn't really have package delivery, or, you know, it wasn't really to the point where it's at now. So, but I think after that trip, I think I really got the bug more after that trip. And after that point, I did want to stay on property. And the next trips that we did after that were completely always on property.
Yeah, I understand. My dad was the same way. We went in 80 for my high school graduation. And he was like, I'm not going to spend $35 to stay on property there. So,
exactly. I mean, I wish we had those prices today, right? Coca-Cola was a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So that was 85. Your love for Disney is just growing and growing and growing. Did you end up going more regular after 85, or did you take a break?
Well, we took a little break, but a miraculous thing happened in 1986, which was we opened up. My father always had his own business, and I was going, my degree is criminal justice. I was in college. But my sister and my mom decided to buy a card store up in Brooklyn because they wanted something to do. I mean, of course, I was getting older, and we've always loved that whole, I guess, flea market thing, or we loved having like a retail type of thing. So we bought this card store in Brooklyn, and lo and behold, I got very interested in it right away because I always loved that kind of thing. And we actually we called Hallmark up. The people we bought it from didn't have Hallmark. They had American Greeting, and Hallmark had Disney licensing, and that was my big thing. I said, I remember telling my sister and my mom, listen, if we get the store, that's great, but we have to call Hallmark in Kansas City. They're like, why? And I was like, well, they have all the Disney licensing, and we want to be legit. We want to have all these great commercials, and they have Hallmark invitations and ornaments. And they said, yeah, it sounds great. Let's see. And the man came down from Hallmark, and he loved the store. He loved it. And in 1986, we opened up the Hallmark store, and we didn't quite have a gold crown store. We had to do some revisions and different things. But by 1988, we were a full-blown Hallmark gold crown store, which meant it's not a franchise, but it's the closest thing to a franchise, mm-hmm. which now means that we had access to everything which was Hallmark, which meant Disney invitations, Disney wrapping paper, Disney Christmas ornaments, anything and everything, plush animals. It was fabulous. So I wasn't in Disney at that particular year, but I was immersed in the product. And that's when I really started doing research on the product. And I mean, it kind of always stuck with me anyway, but like, you know, watching the movies and going to see different things. But now I had tangible things in front of me. And from that point until 2014, we had the store, and it was just, it was wonderful. And I really started going to Disney quite a bit. My son was born in 1992, who the Waffles Foundation is named after. And I remember starting in 93, we went to Disney every single year from 93 up until 2003. In 2003 was when we bought the house in Celebration. And 2007 is when I started working for Disney. But we, from 93 forward, we did not miss a year going to Disney. In fact, a lot of times we went two times, three times, if we could afford it.
I want to go back to the store just very, very quickly. I assumed when you were working in the store, you would get paid for working in the store, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Out of the money you earned, how much did you buy in merchandise to take home?
Oh, holy cow. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, it was just, you know, the tree was, I remember my mom saying, Carrie and I got married in 91. And I remember my mom saying, when I still was at my mom's house, she says, we have no room for, it's all Hallmark one. It's all Disney stuff. What about all the stuff that we have? And we seriously, and my birthday is December 24th. So we actually, we seriously pondered getting two trees, but we just didn't do that because we just didn't have the space. And it was just, but we seriously pondered it. But it was, we took a lot of stuff. We like we always said, we were our own best customers.
That's okay. Yeah.
And the reason why I'm asking now, I used to work for Books Million, and I love books. And it just seemed like whatever I earned in salary got plowed back into Books a Million, then I would come home with all these books. So
that is certainly, yeah, that's very close to it. I mean, especially at that point, because I wasn't married at the time, and I was still in college, and my parents were very good about that. They, you know, I was actually working in the store, and I was running a bowling league as well. I was getting money for that. But it was at that point, I had a lot of disposable income at that point. So I was really going, you know, strong on the Disney stuff. And it was more merchandise related. And then I think when we started going down there, 93 on, a lot of the money went toward the trips. But even then, I started doing T-shirts and, you know, Yadro stuff and all kinds of stuff that it was just anything and everything that we liked. It was just all, it became all part of the collection.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I'm just trying to establish a framework here. We will go back and address some of these things on later episodes. So at what stage, Al, did you say, I'm moving to Orlando?
The stage came, my son, when he was younger, had asthma. And it's cold in up north. And he was on the asthma medication maybe 5 months out of the year. And it just got to the point where we still had the store, but I remember saying to my wife and remember my sister and my brother and everybody, I was like, listen, you know, Matt is just, he doesn't feel good. He's on this medicine all year long. We just love Florida, and it's only 2 hours away from New York. We're going to make the move. And we were doing, you know, we never made millions in the store. It was a neighborhood store. It was more of like, we called it like our ministry. And, but I was able to save enough money up, and we had good credit. And so in 2003, we actually bought the house in Celebration, and we moved to Celebration, and I was able to do a lot of the work from Celebration. At that point, we were doing a lot of wedding invitations, and I was doing some different odd jobs on the side. And I knew at that point, so the winter of, you know, 2002, I guess it would be, was when Matt had a tough winter, and we said, look, that's it. We don't want him being on this medication. And it was miraculous. You know, we moved to Florida, and that very first winter, he came off the medication. And so that was really the culmination of it was, and of course we all love Disney. And I remember Matt telling me when we moved to Celebration in 2003, he says, Dad, you know, I'm really happy in Celebration. He goes, but I have one question, because, you know, kids always give you these deep questions. He was like 8 years old at the time. And he says, Dad, he goes, I just have one question. He goes, where are we going to go on vacation now?
Oh,
that's a good one. True.
So how did you answer him?
Yeah.
I said, well, we could always go to Disneyland, can't we?
Oh, nice one.
And then my nephew turned around and he said, Matt, well, my nephew thought up a saying, and he said, Celebration, where going home is always like a vacation.
Oh,
there you go.
I mean, this is one episode for sure, where I'm hoping we can talk about Celebration, because Steve and I have never been there.
No.
And it's something that we've always wanted to do but never got to do. So I'm going to save all those questions until, you know, you come back on and we can address that. But one quick question. Why did you choose Celebration to begin with?
Well, it was a few reasons. Mostly it was because it was kind of like, I guess it was the same reason why we chose Hallmark, because I kind of feel like if I'm going to do something, I want to try to reach for the top. I mean, well, not necessarily the top, but like the legitimate or the thing that makes me really excited. And I just said, well, if we can live in Florida. And I thought about it. I said, well, it's on Disney property. I had done it. Disney was like my hobby. So which was funny about Celebration was that it was the place before Celebration was a town in 1996. It was where Disney used to put all the alligators. And I remember telling my wife, well, all the alligators, and we love animals. She's like, alligators are in there? I'm like, yeah, it's where they put it. We used to put all the alligators. But it was a combination of wanting to be on Disney property, plus my wife being a real Brooklyn girl, she doesn't drive. So Celebration, I know you said you haven't been there, but it's only a couple of miles from the main road of 192. And it's like, it's a town in and of itself. It's got a hospital. It's got 65 stores. It's got a Publix in there. So you don't have to leave Celebration if you don't want to. So that was a key reason why. And it was beautiful. It was new. We actually got a brand new house in there. We had the house built. We actually have a brick in Celebration, even though we've moved out of Celebration now. We have a brick in Celebration as a founding family. And it just appealed to us in so many different ways.
I can't wait. I mean, and I hear, by the way, anyone listening, if you ever have issues, medical, whatever, that is the hospital you want to go to, the one in Celebration.
Yes, it is. It is the, you know, speaking from a security standpoint, if anything happens to you in Disney World, you know, Walt Disney World, generally for general illnesses, they're going to always send you to Celebration or Horizons. And the only time you don't, and Celebration's a great hospital. They will send you to Dr. Phillips if you have a cardiac issue, because their cardiac unit is very good over there, which is closer to SeaWorld. But 9 out of 10 times, someone going to the hospital, it's on Disney property. And in fact, it's got a lot of things in that hospital. Like, they don't call it wings in the hospital. They call it neighborhoods. And you really feel like you're in a hospital. It's, you know, obviously if you're hooked up to something, you're in a hospital, but you don't get that feeling going in, set up very differently. It's not like a scary feeling. Oh my God, I'm in a hospital. And no, it's just, you feel like you're just somewhere not so scary.
So now you're in Celebration. And what makes you now make that decision of, okay, I want to work for Disney. I live here. I now want to work.
Well, just going to the park so often and just kind of wanting to be immersed in it more. I mean, the store was getting, we knew the thing with the retail store, with the Hallmark store was, we kind of saw with technology going where it was, we knew it was kind of on shortened time. And it did last up until 2014. But by 2007, we saw a decline in business. There was a lot of cards online. Some Hallmark stores were going out of business. It was, we stayed in business. We were the second. There was only one of the Gold Crown stores that stayed in business longer than us. And we stayed in business pretty much just by being a neighborhood store, by doing all the old-fashioned things that people liked. But we saw it go in the other direction. So I said, well, you know what? I mean, my degree is criminal justice, and that's wonderful. But I was in my 40s at that point. And I said, well, I'm not getting any federal job, or I'm too old to be a policeman. So what do I want to do? So I decided at that point, you know, hey, we actually had annual passes. And I said, well, why not be able to go in for free? That'd be wonderful. So I went to casting. And this was an amazing thing, too, because back in those days, you went to casting. You could get an appointment, but you could just walk into casting, just stroll in. It wasn't so computer heavy as it is now. And they would list like 3 different jobs every week. They would list attractions, server, maybe bus driver. So I just went in there and I just went in and I sat down. And I'm very super organized. And I remember having my driving abstract out, which is a thing you get from New York, which shows that I brought that because it showed I was driving for over 30 years and never had an accident. And I just, well, let me just bring that. That might make me look good. It might give me the job. So I was sitting there and she, the lady who I spoke to, the cast member I spoke to, was talking to me about a job working at the Grand Floridian as a dispatcher. And she said, well, this is a really great job. And, you know, it has a lot of responsibility. And I said, well, it sounds kind of nice. I mean, that's the crown jewel of the Magic Kingdom and Disney, Walt Disney World. And so then we got to talk, and then she just happened to glance at what I had on the counter. She's, oh, what's that? What did you bring? I said, well, I didn't know if I would need it, but it's my driving abstract. It shows I have a clean driving record. She goes, well, you know, she goes, in talking to you, she says, I have an offer for you. Would you like to be a monorail pilot? Now, the monorail was my always my favorite thing about Disney, Walt Disney World. Always, hands down, when I saw the monorail, I was at Walt Disney World. I said, are you kidding me? And she said, yeah, we have one opening, and we didn't list it because it's only one opening, and it kind of just came up, and I want to offer it to you. And I said, I want it. I would love to have it. Thank you so much. And that so began my venture into Walt Disney World monorails in 2007. I'll never forget the date. It was 7/7/07, which I thought was lucky, lucky. And what was funny is when I worked at the Disney store on Times Square, each one of those has a number. So that number at a Disney store in Times Square is 777. So that number seemed to be important to me. But that was the date. And from there, I became a monorail. I can tell you about monorail. That might be a whole different episode. But I know you had the other guy speak, and he did wonderful. But that started my career on monorails. And I stayed on monorails officially till I kind of left. The only thing that got me off monorails a bit was I got the wonderful job of Dream Squad, which I still kept my monorail wings through that because everybody wanted that was one of the biggest requests was to drive the monorail. And we could talk Dream Squad probably another episode, but I drove monorails for like 6 months straight. And then Figment got me onto Dream Squad, and I still kept my wings because as long as you do a shift once a month, you could retain your wings. And that's what I did, and it was fabulous.
Andres did an amazing job. He's been on twice, but I know you've got different stories that you will be able to share, because when Andres was doing the monorail, you were not allowed to sit up at the front of the monorail mm-hmm. as a passenger. And I do believe in your time there, that probably was happening, because that would have been about the same time that Steve and I took grandkids down there.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, I might have had you up front because, I kid around and tell you Figment got me on Dream Squad. But honestly, before I got on Dream Squad, they made me what they call a dream maker because they started kidding around and saying that this was the Altor. And yes, you're 100% correct. We used to put people in the bubble, as we called it. And we did that up until July 4th of 2009. And that's when things changed. But in my time at monorail, yes, 100%. Putting the guests up in the bubble. In fact, when I worked at the Disney store, one of the younger coordinators came in, and because I was a lead up in Disney store, she had a video of me. She's like, I think I know you. Kids watch the same video thousands of times, like The Wizard of Oz or whatever. She had seen a video of me thousands of times because it was part of the Disney World video. And I'm doing my thing, talking about everything. When I was a monorail pilot, the big thing was they were making the Bay Lake Tower next to the Contemporary.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the big things, which was, what are they building? And I'd be like, well, it's the Bay Lake Tower. But we've already, you know, Disney, we love our acronyms at Disney. So I would tell them the acronym, it's the BLT. And people felt great by that because now they had some inside stuff. It's the BLT. What are you talking about? The Bay Lake Tower. You don't know that? What's going on?
Yeah.
So I think straight away burger, bacon, lettuce, tomatoes.
Yeah. Yes, me too. BLT. So yeah, so that putting the guests up in the front bubble, I think that was what really cemented me because there was nobody on Dream Squad from transportation, as far as I know, at that point. And me giving those tours, they used to call it the Al Tour. The monorail was not known at that point for guest relations. It was, you know, a lot of the folks were point A to point B, and I'm just, you know, and I love the monorail, and of course I passed the test first time, and I know about 600 volts and all the technical side of it, but that never really floated my boat. The magic floats my boat. So when I had folks up front, I used to talk about what was going on. I mean, I did have one child when I was on Dream Squad who he was, I believe he was autistic, but Disney would call me up and they'd say, well, and I don't really know why. I don't know if his mom was a contributor to something, but or they were just probably being nice. But they used to call me down, and I would sit with him for about an hour at a time, and we would just talk monorail. And that was like a wonderful thing. It was like one of the things I did on Dream Squad, but it was just so lovely having people up in the front of the bubble, and you know, you drove the monorail, and we you know, back in those days, it was, you know, and it's still probably the safest thing at Walt Disney World. That there's been a couple of things that have happened, but the safety system, which I could talk at length on, it's actually called the MAPO system. I don't know if Andreas had talked about that, but it's named after Mary Poppins, because Mary Poppins was the movie that paid for Walt Disney World. That's when Disney got a lot of money from that movie, and that's the money that mostly paid for that park. So in honor of that movie, they named the safety system on the monorail the MAPO system, Mary Poppins.
I've not heard that story.
Yeah.
I did say this on a previous episode, but it's funny. I know when we took the grandkids, we all did get, and as I said, I've already said this, but just to get that little co-pilot certificate to say that you sat up in the front, that is, to me, what Disney was all about. You know, those little sparks of magic, I think.
You're looking at it.
I'm looking at it right now, Al. You know, I've got it on the wall.
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
I have one, too. I have one from, I think, one that I had. I think I had one from 2000. But it was fabulous. We used to give that out. And as a dream maker, they gave me these special monorail stickers. And I remember them telling me, be careful with these things. They cost us like $50 a roll. And they were monorail wings as stickers. And they were just amazing. And I wish I still had a few today. But we gave those out frequently. Because now, I think we're giving out stickers again at Disney. But during the closure and stuff, which I did work the closure as security. That could be something else, but we weren't giving out stickers for the longest time, and I think we've just started giving that out again in small amounts now.
You know, it's kind of funny, Al, because as you're talking, I'm looking at this. What do they call them? Collages that I made up, yeah. And I'm looking in the right hand corner of this, and I've just realized I have a sticker. It's not for the monorail. But it's going to be for an extinct ride. It's for the Magical Express. I didn't know I had that.
Wow. See, there you go. That's a keeper.
Yeah.
That's a keeper.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm off the beam. I sidetracked.
Okay. You like the beam. It's okay. It's all. Yeah. It's okay to go off the beam.
Yeah. Andre taught me that. So... from there, you talk about the Dream Squad, and I know this is going to be one great episode when we get to this. But for our listeners, like Steve and I are fully aware what happened in the year of A Million Dreams. I think I've got it correct.
A year and a half.
Yeah, it went
it's
over.
It's actually 22 months of year. A year.
Was it 22? I couldn't remember. Yes, it was. Okay. Cool.
But for those that was not attending the parks in those days, can you just give a quick kind of breakdown what happened in A Million Years of Dreams?
So the Year of A Million Dreams to date is the most popular celebration that Disney has ever done. They did it in Disneyland and Disney World. It started on October 1st. You know, Disney's budget starts on October 1st. It's when Disney actually opened in, you know, Florida in 71, but it started October 1st, 2006, and it went all the way up till December 31st of 2008. And in this celebration, they literally gave out a million prizes every single year. And it was so popular, they ran it for a second year. And what they did was brilliant as far as this went, because what they did was they took the most magical, and I hate to say most magical, but they took people who were very magical from every division in Disney. And it was brilliant, because one of the key notes of the Year of a Million Dreams was during a day shift in Year of a Million Dreams, we made magic, we gave out prizes. But at night, our sole purpose was to do magic in the parks. So we would go into a land, each one of us would go into a land, we'd draw it out of a hat. And we would they put us in the autograph class so we could do autographs, not in front of the guests, but in the back. We did magical moments with them, like panning for gold. And during the day, what was so amazing of it during the day was there was five different teams. I was on the Magic Kingdom team. We would literally give out the castle suite every single day at the Magic Kingdom. And it was just the most amazing thing, because we used to have to show up at Reedy Creek, which is, of course, the medical part of Disney, because people literally faint when they found out that they won it. But we gave out. It was incredible. But we gave out throwing out the first pitch at spring training. We gave out brunches with the characters. We gave out lunch with an Imagineer. There were so many different prizes. And, of course, those were the really big prizes. But on a normal basis, we gave out mouse ears. We gave out. Now, remember, Fast Passes back then, there was no computer Fast Pass. Fast Pass then was a thing around your neck. You'd rip off a piece of plastic and you give it in and you got in on front of the ride. And we used to give those out. And it was a wonderful celebration. And I was so privileged to get on it. And it started in October of 2006. And I got on the team in October 1st of 2007. And 5 months after starting with Disney. And it was the best job that I've had in my entire life. It was, you just literally lived magic. When we talk about the episode, there's so many different stories, but just giving out that castle suite alone was magnificent.
How you chose the guest, I really think should be the teaser for that episode, because
yeah,
it was really interesting. I do know the story thanks to you now, but we'll definitely save that one for next time.
Tell it.
Okay, no.
That one. Okay. So that's only one of the ways to win it, but that was our favorite way of giving it out at the Magic Kingdom. And they used to call us, you know, it was funny because we used to call it the Leprechaun Syndrome, because it was overseen by a third party. And we had a bag full of, and that's funny stories with that too. We used to all walk around with a satchel, and we had stickers and we had, you know, pins and buttons and all that stuff. We had no strings, which we could give you up to $50 of, you know, if you lost your sunglasses. But the real prize is the prize part of it. It was overseen by a third company because they didn't want to have nepotism or anything. So they watched us very closely. And we walked around with atomic watches. We used to give out prizes on the world time. That's how strict it was. But as strict as it was, the people on Dream Squad, the people I worked with, I'm friendly with so many of them still today. It was such a wonderful group because we used to have arguments over not doing the job. We used to do it, you know, which one got to do it. And we all had our specialties. And the reason why Disney took people from every division was because, in my case, if someone came from a veteran or something like that, and he wanted to drive the monorail, well, we didn't have to make 20 phone calls. I had the monorail connection. I had my wings. I could go up and I could take a train and take them on there. If we did a wedding proposal, which we did so many wedding proposals, we had someone from PhotoPass on there. We had someone from attractions. We had somebody, you know, who worked operations. So we could do anything with two or three phone calls. It was incredible. And I'll tell you, it was so funny. Each one of us, back in those days, they don't really do it anymore. They used to give you a Tinkerbell pin when you got 25 guest letters. And all of us, I mean, and we didn't, you know, we didn't look for the ink or the praise, but, you know, what does a guest do when you give them the castle suite? I mean, they want to do something. They want to thank you. So we all got so many letters, so much to the point that there was a husband and wife team who were doing the recognitions and giving out these things and giving out the pins. And I remember the man calling the Dream Squad office one time. He called it the Dream Office. And he called up and he said, hey, we had, you know, 9 or 10 people on our team at that point. And he was like, does everybody in the team have the pin? We were like, yeah, why? Everybody's got the pin. Well, enough already. It's 8, 10, 20 a week. I can't keep up with you guys. I have a whole park to do. And we were like, we're not the ones doing it.
Oh, I can't wait for that episode. Ooh. I really can't. We were granted the lowest end. And wow. I will talk about that when, you know, we have that episode, but it might have been the lowest giveaway. But once again, it just means so much. And that's also in that framed picture on my wall.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Can you say what it is?
Yeah, I can. We've got a couple. One was Steve went into the Christmas shop.
Christmas shop. Dorcas.
And
what's her name?
Yeah, I was. See, you can even still remember the name. How many years ago was that? Yeah. And he remembers the name. It was your first pin trade or something that you did.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And she just freaked out. She was like, oh my gosh, yes, this is a special moment. And then she went and got the card.
Yeah. And then awesome. The other one that's up there is we were at Animal Kingdom. We had got off the bus. And we had got stopped by a cast member that was driving a golf cart. And he said, oh, let me drive you up to the front. Well, I mean, by the time you got on, you were basically
100 yards,
and you would get off, you know.
It was great.
I mean, and we got a certificate for a magical moment. And
it's amazing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I mean, we never got the castle, but what I've got is magical memories. Yeah. So,
exactly right. And most people didn't get the castle. You know, it was just a random thing, but it was all those kind of memories and all the little things, like, you know, taking people up to see fireworks and just little things, just like people would ask you questions. And we were given a tremendous amount of autonomy. We were never rushed, so we could stand with someone. We used to do a cheering section. I think I probably watched Spectrum Magic and Wishes probably more than almost anybody on the planet Earth. And a quick, funny story. We used to do a cheering section during Spectrum Magic. And just somehow it started where we used to boo the evil characters. And we started booing, you know, when they came by. And it wasn't, you know, we'd have the kids doing it. And we used to boo the big bad wolf. And, you know, of course, you know, if you work at Magic Kingdom, you eat in the tunnel, you eat in a place called the Mouseketeria. So here we are on Dream Squad, 9 of us sitting there planning the next magical adventure or something. And this tall man comes up to us and he says to us, you know, and he's kind of like half crying. And he says, why do you people have to boo me every single night? It's so, why do you do that? I feel so bad about that. And we look, we were like, what? And then we look like, are you the wolf? He says, yes, I play the wolf. And you don't have to boo. I said, it's just for fun and games. We're just doing it for the guests. And he was like, you know, I know you're not doing it, but I feel very bad about that because I'm a good guy. And you know, listen, from now on, we are going to cheer for you.
Oh, wow. That's so funny.
I'm like, why are you cheering a villain?
Right. And we didn't have villains, you know, things like you do now, like the after hours villains. And, you know, and it was just, it, you know, it's funny. One of the people on Dream Squad, one of the cast members started it, and the guests loved it. They just, you know, they were interacting with everything. And, you know, you got a reaction from the characters because they would look over and, you know, and I'll tell you, we used to, and then what would happen is just a little caveat just to put in there. They often do, you know, again, guests can't really see this, but when the park is closed at night, they do parade practice. And the way Disney does parade practice, the characters don't wear their costumes at night during parade practice. So after that whole thing with the big bad wolf, we started watching the parade practices because we got to know the people, the cast members, what they looked like, because you had no idea what they looked like. Right. And it was amazing to see. I can't tell you how, and I wish someone had it. It would ruin the magic, of course, but just seeing Spectro done, because, you know, the new people would come in and they train them. Seeing it done without costumes was absolutely amazing because you got to see the people who were under these costumes, and they did all the same things they did during the regular Spectro Magic, except without the costume.
I would privately like to see that film.
Yes. Nobody, I don't think it's ever been filmed, to be honest.
Oh, no.
Disney doesn't allow us to do things like that, but it's in my mind, and it was just amazing. But it was just incredible.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I've never done this before, Al, because normally when we touch on a subject, you know, Steve and I or whoever's co-hosting,
we delve.
And this is killing me because we're just top surfacing it. And I mean, it's the way it has to be because your career as a cast member didn't end there. You went on to become something else. And if we could touch on that, that would be great.
Yes. Well, as I mentioned, my degree is criminal justice. And, you know, I'd probably say when Dream Squad ended, for those who don't know, the Disney week starts on a Sunday. That's why, there's a joke, Epcot, what does Epcot stand for? Every paycheck comes on Thursday. You probably heard that one before. But Disney week actually starts on Sunday. Now, the most depressing days ever on Dream Squad were Dream Squad ended on 12/31, 2008. And that was actually a Wednesday. So we all went to different roles. And those last 3 days, we had our dream bags and we had our no strings, but we had no prizes to give out. It was probably the 3 most depressing days ever on Dream Squad. But when that ended, I I decided to, I loved working monorails, but at that point in time, we weren't putting people in the bubble anymore. So I decided, you know what, let me throw my hat in the ring, let me get into security. So from that point on, 2009, I started working Disney security, and which was another amazing thing because it I was able to bring a kind of a magic to Disney security, and you know, of course, very serious about the job, but Dream Squad always helped me because it opened up a lot of doors for me because we got a chance to really mingle with every different department in Disney. So, you know, during something would happen, I would know most of the people who would show up. It made it very comfortable for me. And so I went on to do that. And then my son wanted to go to college in New York. So we left Florida in 2010, and we went back and I worked the store for a couple more years. And then when the store closed, I became a leader in Times Square Disney Store, which is retail. I was an assistant manager, and that was another. It's probably another whole story.
Yeah.
And then and then after that was over, we ended up closing the store, and I did a few other things, and we decided to move back to Florida in 2019. And when I moved back to Florida in 2019, up until 7 weeks ago, I worked. I was a leader in security. I was a foreman, a trainer. Worked security, worked all the positions globally, and which was a whole different angle to Disney. But I was always able to bring the magic to it, and which was really the secret to Disney. No matter what role you're in, you got to remember you're still a cast member, and you're working at the best place in the entire world, and you got all these characters to draw from. And most people, 99 people out of 100, 99 guests out of 100, they're lovely people, and they're not there to make your day hard. And in fact, security, you know, it lent to so many funny stories as well, but it was just, I could just go on and on for all the wonderful stories, but yeah, that's more stuff that I did, and it was great.
Like I said, this is so frustrating because now I want to ask you loads of questions about security, and I've got a whole back, Al. Let me ask you this question.
He could make him his own show. Let's call it Al's Barnyard.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Barnyard?
Well, yeah, it goes from Toy Story 2.
Oh, okay.
Well, Big Al's, you know, from Country Bear Jamboree.
Big Al's.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm with you.
She's never watched it.
I think I've watched it once. I'm not a great movie follower. If you listen to all the other episodes, you'll know. You'll That's soon fine. Learn.
She did watch Cruella.
There's so many different things in Disney that you have to just be, you can't do everything. So you have to kind of be selective.
Like I said at the very beginning of this show, we know you're coming back on the show more than once because all the areas you've touched on tonight, I know we've got loads of questions to ask you, and I know you've got stories that you could share, want to share, or maybe don't want to share. You know, I mean, that's up to you. But I think, you know, you've got a lot to offer to our listeners. Under normal conditions, at this point, we have this routine that we do where, you know, we get to know your Disney side. Well, I'm not doing that tonight because I think what I would like to do is just make a whole show of Al's personal Disney side. And it'll be questions like, you know, your favorite ride and all that stuff. I don't think I would like to do this tonight because I want to switch gears. And if you're comfortable with it, I want you to share with us about the Waffles Foundation.
Yes, and I deeply appreciate that, both Sheila and Steve. It's so great that you let us do that. Well, I was always very close with my son. My son was a very gifted musician, and to put it long story short, we lost him in 2019, and through a very, you know, sad, bad circumstance. One of the things that his name was Matthew, and his nickname was Waffles. He got that nickname in Celebration High School because he loved waffles. And you asked me before one of the reasons why we moved to Celebration. Well, one reason that I was holding back on was the fact that Celebration High School and Celebration School had a magnificent had and has a magnificent music program. And my son, you know, we always knew he was going to be a musician. He was a lovely person. He had no agenda. Just a magnificent person. He loved teaching kids how to play guitar, and he just had a thing for music. And he just picked up. He did have a lot of formal training, but it was mostly just the love of it. And when we lost him in 2019, through, you know, very sad circumstances, and I really can't talk too much about that because we do have a legal suit going on where he was lost, and it involves a theme park, not the one where I worked, and not the one that where they have whales and fish. So it's another one out there. So when we lost him in 2019, we said, well, we were devastated. And, you know, and I want to say this one thing to people before I really get into the foundation is that seeking help is the most important thing. I mean, I'm very vocal and very outgoing, which is good for me because there's days that there's a lot of tough days, but I have my, you know, don't be ashamed to go ask for help. I mean, I have great doctors. I have wonderful family and friends, and I'm a talker, and that's good because I get it off my chest. Some people, it's not so easy, but I want to tell everybody out there, seek help because you can't do it on your own. So with that being said, after Matt passed, we did all the arrangements. We got everything done. And my brother-in-law, Richie, had actually turned around and said, you know, you should really start a foundation. And because Matt was such a special person, he was very close with Matt. And I said, Richie, that's a fabulous idea, because we were at the services, and we had about 7 or 8 those letters that kids kind of draw with the crayons and stuff. And they had, you know, Miss You, Matt, and things like that. And I said, that's a wonderful idea. So what we set out to do, we realized that there's a lot of kids, and these were the kids that Matt loved to teach how to play guitar. There's a lot of people who can't, because musical instruments are very expensive and lessons are very expensive. So we decided that we wanted to find a foundation, formulate a foundation that specializes in donating musical instruments and lessons to children who can't afford to play. And it was wonderful because my good friend Lorraine Nepple, who is actually a Disney ambassador in the Disney store in Times Square, very smart woman. She works a lot of charity. She's almost like she works with her daughter's high school. And she was very instrumental in helping us get the legitimate 501c3, because when you have a foundation, again, being a person like this, I want to be legitimate. It's a big process. It takes you 6 or 7 months, and you have to go through the IRS, and they check your background. So you have to have officers. So in the foundation, I'm the president. My good friend, Lorraine Nepple, she's the secretary. I have another great friend named Lewis, who's so supportive. He's a director as well. And we have my wife, Carrie, as the treasurer. But we are a legitimate 501c3 foundation. And what that means is that people can, whatever money people donate, or organizations or businesses, it means that they can take it off their taxes. We have a, when you become a certified 501c3, you get what's called an EIN number. It's like a business number. Mm-hmm. And that's what people use. And it's kind of like the foundation is like a person. And when you apply for a credit card or something, it's like you use that number, and it's like a person. So we are currently, we've started the foundation officially in 2020. So a year later, we've done a lot of great things. We're currently sponsoring 3 children in New York City who are in this program called Operation Music Project. It's a magnificent program. And these 3 children have gotten instruments, and they get lessons from teachers who work at Juilliard School of Music. It's like the foremost school in the entire world.
Oh, absolutely.
It is amazing. And we just started sponsoring a child here in Sarasota, where we live now, from the Suzuki Music School, which is another famous school. And they, what they do is, it's something called the Suzuki Method, which means they incorporate listening, because they incorporate music like a, it's like when children learn a language, it's learned by listening. So that's how they incorporate their music, and they incorporate, it's like a triangular thing, the teacher, the student, and the parent. Along with that, we just donate random instruments to children who need them. We've also worked a lot with St. Joseph the Worker Catholic School, which is the school that Carrie and I went to as you know, received our sacraments in the school, our grammar school. We also were work with Our Lady of Perpetual Help in Brooklyn, which is the school. My son's favorite music teacher is a guy, a big shout out to Mr. Diaz, Henry Diaz, who's a musician. He's literally like the Jack Black in the School of Rock, but he's a real teacher. He epitomizes that. He's the one that planted the seed in my son to play music. And my son, it was the first time my son really knew a musician, a real musician, and he was cool. Mr. Diaz is super cool. You know, he wears the black concert shirts, and he's just super, super cool. And we have him to thank for getting my son to the point that he was at, and all the other people along the way. And so that's what the foundation stands for. And we're part of Amazon Smile. People can do, they do fundraisers on Facebook. I have a good friend of mine named Veronica who we get grants. She gave us grants from this place called the Kiwanis Club in Canarsie, Brooklyn. And it's just people donate. The website that we have was donated by this lovely man named Tom who lives out in Colorado. People just want to give. People have been so genuine and so wonderful about it. And we have a page on Facebook. You can keep up with us. It's called the Waffles Foundation, Inc. And you can email me at wafflesfoundation@gmail.com. We also have a website where you can see my son's music and you can see videos of what we've been up to lately, pictures of the kids we sponsor. And that's actually www.wafflesfoundation.org. And I just want to thank Sheila and Steve for giving me this time to talk about the foundation, because music, it's some, you know, music is the first program that typically is cut from a school or a program. So, and it's such a focus. And kids, I know kids like my son, you know, we knew early on my son didn't want to be a banker, or what, he liked his hair a little long, and we knew he was going to go on and get some ink tattoos. And, you know, we knew that from the first concert we brought it to, which was Weird Al Yankovic, you know. And so it's very important to have these type of programs, because not everybody wanted to be a banker or a financial guy on Wall Street, or, you know, a doctor or a lawyer. And there's people out there who are very autistic, and they need to be formulated in a special niche, so to speak. And that's exactly what we try to do, and try to push that forward and keep these programs going and support these teachers who are just giving their time and their effort for these kids. And it's the gift of music. And we make the world sound like a better place, and it is a better place. And just for hearing the music that these lovely kids can give out. And we're actually going to a recital on Sunday. And this is just, it's just great, great stuff.
I'm just thinking, I was talking with Sheila when we were discussing this not too long ago. I mean, I've got an old trumpet upstairs.
Collecting dust, doing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, people have, you know, their kids go off. They didn't really do anything. They've got a trumpet. They've got a, actually mine wasn't a trumpet. It was a
trombone. And it wasn't Steve that played it. It was his son, Logan.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty. I've been to many practice sessions like that. Guitar, garage band stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you're hinting at is fabulous, because that's the greatest thing about it, is that people can donate instruments, and either we'll pay for the shipping, or they can pay for it and we'll give them a receipt that they can take off their taxes, so which they can take off the shipping, or we'll pay for the shipping. And we'll marry that instrument with a kid who wants to play.
There you go.
Okay. Walk me through that process. So we've got this instrument upstairs in the attic, just been collecting dust for how many years?
Well, it is in a case.
It is in the case, yes. Yeah. Okay. So I want to donate it to you, Al.
Okay.
So you're saying you will pay for shipping, or, you know, if I decide to pay for shipping, the foundation pays for the shipping, right?
Right. Or you can get it taken off your taxes. If you pay for the shipping, then we give you a receipt and you can bring it to your tax professional, and it's got our EIN number on it, which is a certified through the Internal Revenue Service. So I'm all about communication. So it's kind of like, it's almost like it's hard not to find us, but yes, you could find us. I could give my phone number. You can call me up if you want me to give the phone number. But the best way to do it is if you go on to, you can email me at wafflesfoundation@gmail.com. Or if you go to our website, which is www.wafflesfoundation.org, we have a form on there where you could actually write down what you have. And sometimes we have people who live around that area. We can have someone even pick it up for you. But you could write us that little, you could just click on it. It goes right to our email. and via that way, or you could phone us. Yeah, so that's probably the best way to do it, if you go onto that or you email me. This way you could actually give me more specifics, but any which way that you guys want to do it, that the listeners would like to do it, we will be so happy to get that instrument and give it, because there's so many programs, so many kids out there who just want to play, and it doesn't matter what instrument, because a lot of these music programs are short on funding, and we will definitely find the place. And not only will we do that, we'll give them a shout out, and we'll show you the picture of where it went and a whole storyline behind it.
Okay. This is one time that I'm not going to leave this for the next episode, because I do have a couple of quick questions. We will, you know, touch on this in the future as Absolutely. Well. But okay. So what I'm hearing from you, this could be a potential, it's potentially a two-way street. So this trombone that's in my attic, do you have a list that's starting, like a registry around America, where you're starting to, you know, gather that information of
who needs what
and where?
We actually don't have a registry, but we do have, through the website, I have an open invitation on there for anybody to go on the website. And of course, it's a two-way street. It's not just about giving. You could go onto our website and make a request, and we will make that happen. I mean, we're a small foundation. I mean, we're building it up as we go. But if someone goes on and says, hey, I want an acoustic guitar, and we'll see what we have in our inventory. And if we don't have it in our inventory, we'll just probably write them a check and just say, here, you know, here's a, you know, this is the instrument or something. But yeah, so it's a two-way street. So in your case, you could just send it to us and we'll send you a receipt, or you could, whatever which way you'd like to do it, we'll find a way to get it done. In some cases, we have we call them ambassadors, people who work with our foundation. And now that we've moved out of Orlando, our director, Lewis, just picked up two instruments over there, and he's going to bring them up to us. But we don't officially have a registry like that. We'd be working on something like that. So currently, it would have to work through our website. And right. I'm kind of doing the registry kind of on my own kind of thing. But they could go on there and request what they need, and we'll follow up and tell you where it went and give you a whole story behind it. I actually have a YouTube channel too, which I call Kindred Souls of Brooklyn, where I actually do with videos and actually show things like that, where things went. And I'm able to put those videos onto our Waffles Foundation site. So it works out nicely.
Now, when I look at your website, I did say this to you the other day, it's a great website, easy to use. What I love about your foundation is so many people these days are struggling with money, and it is hard for them to donate. But it goes back to someone like Steve and I, who has this instrument. And what you're saying is, if we wanted to donate, it wouldn't cost us one penny to get in contact with you and say, we've got this, can we send it to you?
That is 100% correct.
And okay.
That is correct. And I just want to add in that we just, as of last month, as an act of faith, so to speak, we actually have a storage unit now here in Sarasota to store instruments, because we've been getting them. And I said, hey, you know, I want to go by an act of faith. And it's not a huge storage unit, but it's climate controlled. So the instruments stay at the way they should be. And it's only a couple blocks from us. And we're able to store instruments now, whether it be a piano or a trombone or anything, as a matter of fact.
When I look at your website, Al, you have a motto or a logo of words. I don't have it in front of me.
Yes.
Would you like to share that with us?
I would. And it actually came to me because, you know, my son is he and I were very close. And I was in the shower one day and I was thinking, what logo, what saying could I have for this? And, you know, my brother often says, you know, he's, look, you were a wonderful father. My sister always tells me that too. Of course, you know, you always feel guilty because Matt isn't around today. But my brother always says, because you just weren't a great father. You and Matt did things together. You had so many common interests, and we were kind of like, you know, partners in crime. And he had his own life, and Carrie and I, we did our thing, but we were very close. And so I was in the shower one day thinking, what would be good? And it just came to me. And again, I don't know if he sent it to me or how those things really work, but the actual saying is saving lives through music, one note at a time, and note meaning the musical note.
Yeah.
And if you look at our website, it's funny. We have two different logos. The one logo, which is another story for another day, but my good friend Robbie, who I work Disney Security with, he's a graphic artist. He made a wonderful logo for us with a waffle and a musical notes and a halo. But the logo that's on there right now, which I'll use both of them, is actually a logo that my son, if you look, you'll see pictures of Matthew or Waffles on the site. So I took this logo a day he met Tony Hawk, which was, it's actually one of the other reasons how he got into music, which was he started listening to rock music when we bought a pro skater game and it had a very heavy AC/DC soundtrack. So my wife bought him this AC/DC CD and he met Tony Hawk and he said, Tony, you got me into becoming a great guitarist. And he was like, what are you talking about? I'm a skater. He goes, no, you're pro skater game. That's how I started playing. And he was like, oh. So they had the picture of him, that logo picture is actually a picture of Matt. A lot of people think it's a picture of Jesus, but it's not. It's actually Matthew. And I remember thinking one day, Matt, it was that I actually started laughing because, you know, you have your days and I get up and I'm crying and Carrie's crying. And, you know, it's very tough to deal with. But I have a lot of funny moments, too. And that was a funny moment where I said, wow, Matt's going to kill me. He's going to say I made him look like Jesus. You know, that's what everybody thinks. But if you look at my son, he's got always liked his hair a little long. He's got light features. And I was like, I never teased him about this. He does kind of look a little bit like Jesus.
Oh, boy. Wow. I'm really hoping that the work that you're doing in memory of your son could help so many other kids out there. And as I said, it could be just some instrument sitting in a corner collecting dust that could change a child's life. So I am really, you know, reaching out to our listeners. You know, maybe you don't have an instrument there, or, you know, but maybe your neighbor does. Spread the word of this great organization that's, you know, trying to help kids in their life. Just very quickly, I am interested on your website, and we will start wrapping this up, but on your website, you also mention about vehicles. Are you still doing that?
We have not gotten a vehicle yet, but as a non-for-profit, we are able to, if someone did want to donate a vehicle or a boat or anything like that, we're able to do that, and same thing would apply. They would get a receipt. And we would use that to buy musical instruments or lessons. But we have not gotten something so big as that as yet. But I dream big. And, hey, I was on Dream Squad.
We're all there you go.
I worked for Disney for over 8 years. I dream big. And it's not from a prideful standpoint. But it's just for, I believe the way, and again, I've taken so much from Disney that I try to incorporate into the foundation. You know, when Disney creates a ride, the old term is that they don't build a building and put the roller coaster inside the ride. They build the roller coaster first and put the building around it. And that's kind of how we do that for the foundation. I dream very big, and if it doesn't come to that, but we're seeing wonderful things, and you just fall into different things, like lovely people like yourself who are giving us the opportunity to spread the word and create music all around the world. It's just amazing. And this is what's been happening with the foundation. And but yes, anything that anyone's willing to give, they are able to get a receipt for it, and we're certainly able to do that. No problem.
And I think it's great that you've got ambassadors around that's also helping you. I don't know if you want to give them a quick shout out at this time before we close out.
Yes, I want to give our ambassadors a great big shout out. Currently, we have four ambassadors. One is my sister, Diane, who I'm, you know, very close with. I was partners with her on the store for all those years. And the way a 501c3 works is that you can't have blood relations, because they want to ensure, not that we would, whatever, but like you're not by law able to have. So she wasn't able to be on the foundation. So she's an ambassador. And she is kind of like, we have different areas of neighborhoods where they work. So my sister lives in Brooklyn, where I grew up. My wife, Carrie, grew up. So she handles all the things that come up in the Park Slope and Windsor Terrace section of Brooklyn. Then we have a wonderful musician named Sam Z. He's a magnificent musician. Nobody does a moonwalk like Sam Z. A big shout out to Sam Z. He's amazing, and he's a younger gentleman, and he works on all the stuff that we need in Southern Brooklyn, which is kind of like Coney Island and, you know, Bay Ridge area. And then we have two lovely ladies who I work with in the Disney store who were the best people to, you know, when I was a lead assistant manager over there, they were the people that I would love to say, listen, I was so happy to see them on the roster because they were just absolutely amazing. They love Disney. Two wonderful ladies, Alyssa and Lauren, want to give them a great big shout out to. Alyssa and Lauren, I didn't mention this. We also are a part of Amazon Smile. Amazon does a program where when you order through Amazon, you can sign up under a non-for-profit. So if you go under Amazon Smile, you got to log in under it. You can pick the Waffles Foundation. And every time you make a purchase from Amazon, they will donate 0.5% of every donation out of every order from their profit. So the person ordering doesn't pay anything. Amazon themselves pays for that. So Alyssa and Lauren are currently on a big project where they're actually trying to get the word out there about Amazon Smile. And so a big shout out to them. They live in Yonkers, which is kind of a subsidiary of New York, near Westchester. And they're doing a wonderful job with that. And so a big shout out to everyone and all the people who are doing. People could actually do a fundraiser on Facebook. Facebook has been wonderful, very supportive with us, as well as Amazon. So just a big shout out to everybody. So everyone is doing their part, and as well as the people who did the website and my friend Robbie and everybody who's so supportive. And we're so thankful. But yes, there's so many ways that they could go about that.
And once again, I think I'm correct in saying that your website is wafflesfoundation.org. Yes.
It's actually www.wafflesfoundation.org. Yes.
Okay. Do you know when I
you
first
not the www.
But you know what, Steve, when I first started saying you can find us at www.monorail tales, Steve used to give me a hard time, so I just automatically now drop off the www. So
when you get a foundation, there can be no two that are named the same. Right. I think Waffle House does some kind of foundation. It's called Waffles House Foundation or something. But basically, it's like having a business or a franchise. You can't have the same name. So if they look it up, it's not hard to find. They will find it on there, and they'll just see the logo. So you just have to put in Waffles Foundation, and it'll come up. Thankfully, that's a great thing that they do through the IRS that makes it much simpler when you go for things, because everything goes by that name and your EIN number.
Yes. And you know what, Al, we do this for all of our guests. If they have a website or whatever, you know, where we're trying to, you know, pass it that information, these sites that you've given us, you know, the website, we will put into the show notes. So because I think when you're driving a car, it's sometimes maybe hard to remember, you know, websites and things, but just
go off the side of the road and write this down.
Yes.
What's the matter with you? Don't wait for the show notes. Get off the side of the road.
Hey, Steve, I think that time you spent in the Bronx in my neck of the woods kind of affected your driving.
That's how he's going to be talking all night now. Thank you, Al.
just so you know, my stepfather was born and raised in Yonkers. So, yeah, I'm the Westchester area and everything. So, yeah.
Shout out to Yonkers.
Yeah.
So if any of our listeners can share the love, that would be great. And definitely spread the word, because once again, what was that logo that you shared with us, Al?
Saving lives through music, one note at a time.
Great. Yeah. And as I said, you are going to come back on and, you know, you're going to share some great stories. I know you are. About Dream Squad and how people fainted on Main Street. So,
it's my pleasure. I think I'll come on anytime you want me to come on, as often as you like. You two are wonderful, lovely people. And And as much as you want me to come on, I think I have limitless stories. And the scary part is that they're all true. And
no, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to get into it now. We've already talked about you coming back. It's a no-brainer. You are such a lovely person. And, you know, if Monorail Tales can help even the smallest way of helping your foundation, we're here for you.
Mm-hmm. I so appreciate that. And I thank you both so very much. I can't thank you enough. And thank you on behalf of everybody in the foundation and the children who are involved with it. I can't thank you enough. You people are lovely for doing this. And it's really going to change lives. What you've done tonight for this one podcast alone is going to change so many lives. I just feel it and I know it. And it's just going to be miraculous.
And if anyone wants to just get in contact with us, you know where to find us. Email me at Sheila@monorailtales.com. Come over to Facebook. We'd love to see you there. I'll tell you what, Al, I'm really excited about our next episode.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for coming on, Al. You did great first time, and you will get the 10 questions that we ask everybody else, but not tonight.
Sounds lovely. I'm ready. I mean, I love telling stories, and you guys are a great company. Both of you are a wonderful company. I feel like I'm sitting in, you know, I'm sitting in my living room, but I just feel like we're all sitting on Main Street or something, just chatting. Aww. Like we used to do a Dream Squad. And, you know, it's just amazing. And like I said, when you guys come down, we got to get together. You know, if you come to Sarasota, or we'll make a trek over there to Orlando or whatever. And we just, you know, we'll buy you dinner, whatever. Just have to get together with you.
Hey. Since you were talking about Olive Garden the other day, that's it. You got it. Olive Garden.
It's a date. Sounds great to us.
All right. So to our listeners, thank you so much for staying with us to the end of this episode. And we'll talk again soon. Yes, Stephen, you want to say something?
Nope.
Nothing. Okay.
I forgot.
That's old age. Yeah, okay, so to our listeners, good night, stay safe, we love you, and we will talk soon. Good night, Steve. Good night, Al.
Good night.
Good night, Steve. Good night, Sheila.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, viewers.
Switch on the sky and the stars glow for you. Go see the world.